Penn State will play Washington. The long, deep, steep history loop between the two. This is the third meeting ever between them.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's only the third. But that first one, you know, I'm really deep into that because of after I didn't realize it until I started running the sports museum, and I find this football, and it said, and back then, you know, back when the college football started out, they only used one football in a game. Yeah. Keep in mind now they give them away.
Remember, each team has its own footballs.
Yeah, and right. but they get the winning football they'd give they played used in the game. They'd use that in the they give it to the winning team. So they go home and with Penn State they'd come back and they'd write their scores on it. So I'd see these old scores. We have several in the collection. But I saw this one from Washington, 1921, and I'm thinking to myself, what's this all about? And then I started to look up and did the research. Penn State had never. Let me back up and said. We knew that you're looking up that Penn State had played in the 23 Rose Bowls. That meant the 22 team went to the Rose Bowl.
Right.
This is 1 year before. The fact is they'd never played, Penn State had never played west of Columbus, Ohio State, until this game. And they had scheduled the game earlier in the season. Games weren't scheduled 2, 3, 5 years in advance. Hugo Bezdik, the coach at Penn State, had been a coach at Oregon and taken a team to the Rose Bowl. Oregon team to the Rose Bowl, and then took during the World War One, had taken a team to Mare Island, Army type team, to the Rose Bowl. Rose Bowl wasn't known as the Rose Bowl back then; it was a Tournament of Roses. Didn't come into later, as you know. But then he was also a baseball guy, and he was managing the Pittsburgh Pirates when they hired him because he had been to West Coast to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So anyhow, he arranged this game through his West Coast connections. He thought that the 1920 team should have been, Penn State's 1920 team should have gone to the Rose Bowl, the Tournament of Roses, and they didn't get the bid. So he wanted to impress them. So he scheduled this game, and they scheduled to after the Pitt game. Pitt game was still the normal game, and after the Pitt game, the players piled into the train to the old Union Station, which is still there, down near the Strip District, and they took a day and a half. Well, they got there Monday morning. They took the fast train. Coming back, they took six and a half days because played tours. But they get out there, and where I read is that he actually closed the practices. He wanted a secret practice because he wanted to win this game so badly because he wanted to show up the Rose Bowl. People believe because of this game, eventually they got divided the next year because that's another story. So they get out there and what I found out then is Washington Huskies were not known as the Huskies then. They were known as the Sun Dodgers. It was the next year they changed it to the Huskies.
But
very interesting. And it was the first game played in the stadium they're in. And back then they seated 30,000 was seating capacity. And they said the attendance was 35,000, which meant there was standing room only.
Right.
We're watching these guys from the East come in. And Penn State dominated the game throughout, even though the final score doesn't seem like it. They scored touchdowns in the first and second quarter before Washington even scored. Made it 14-7 just before half. And then the third touchdown and made final score made it 21-7. But Glenn Killinger was the quarterback, and back then it was the power formation. They didn't throw much passes back in those days. He threw 12 passes, 11 of them to Stan McCollum, who was the end on the team. McCollum set a Penn State record that I found in the record book had never been put. He caught 11 passes in that game. It was a single game record that stood up for 70 years. But Killinger became an All-American after the season. One of the reasons he was is this team became known as the mystery team because in the beginning, when they started the season, they didn't know what they had. And after they pulled off a couple upsets, they tied Harvard, which was 13-13, which is an upset, and then beat Georgia Tech at the Polo Grounds. The media started calling it the mystery team. So to this day, they're still known as the mystery team because nobody knew who they were, and they came out of the blue. But after the game, even before, while they were making the trip out there, they started to get hints about going to some bowl games. The only one game was the Tournament of Roses game. Someone wanted to set up a game against California at the Tournament of Roses, Notre Dame at the Polo Grounds, or Center College in Chicago, which was a big college, or Texas in Dallas, and Oregon in Portland. So a lot have been trying to set up, and Penn State turned it down because, no, we've already made our West Coast trip. And so the next year, by March of the next year, secretly, the Tournament of Roses invited Penn State, because of their past, to play in the 23 Rose Bowl, and that's how we wound up there. That's just a fascinating story.
It is, because... day and a half to get out there, closing practices, things that would be you take for granted travel today. Let's start with that. You take that part for granted because, I mean, you know, everybody will charter and fly out.
Someone said when I posted, they flew it. No, they took a train. I mean, they couldn't. Right. The planes weren't flying.
Right. I mean, they couldn't do that. And then to play the game and to dominate the game. Hugo had been coaching out on the West Coast, so I think he knew what he was getting into.
He knew what he was getting into. He had it all. I've tried to look up on the internet, tried to find out some articles at the time at Washington paper. I haven't been able to do it yet, but I'm still interested in it because that ball is still on display in a museum.
Yeah,
we put it in the football trophy case in the museum, and it's still there. And I said when people ask me when I give tours about these things, that's one of the most fascinating. And again, it's ironic that Michigan we didn't play until we got into the Big Ten.
Right.
And Washington we've only played one other time in another postseason game, and yet it seemed like they had scheduled Washington.
Yeah.
I mean, we played USC. It was big. We played UCLA. Washington was a power just like they were for years and years, particularly when Don James was coaching.
Yeah.
So why didn't we play them? But then we get to the Aloha Bowl.
Which really was not a well-played game.
Terrible played game.
Penn State didn't win it till late, if I remember. And there aren't many games on the planet where the MVP is the punter.
Yeah, it was 1 year old. The Aloha Bowl, it was a Christmas holiday in Honolulu. And 83, if you recall, was a rebuilding year. We won the national championship. And then we started out with three embarrassing losses. We lost to Nebraska and the...
Kickoff Classic.
Cincinnati.
14-3.
And Iowa.
Iowa in a shootout with Chuck Long.
I think Chuck brings that up occasionally on the Big Ten mm-hmm. Network, which he should. But
it's okay because Penn State went out to Iowa and beat Chuck Long the next year. So, I mean, he doesn't bring that part up.
But they came through because they were, Joe coaches those teams, and they came through and finished with an 8-3 record and wound up get invited to the bowl game.
Yeah, they were 7-0-1. In fact, the one was the tie with Pitt at the end, 24-24.
Yeah, which is also, we've talked about that before, the famous game where...
6 seconds.
6 seconds left, and the Dozier, I think he went out of bounds earlier.
He went out of bounds earlier, and they lost track of the clock on the scoreboard, but the officials, and the Pitt, to credit Foge Fazio's, always said, he said, look, they told us how much time was going on.
Yeah, Foge said it. A lot of the Pitt fans, Joe's getting official. No. I mean, I was there sitting in the stands and remember that game. They really weren't informing the fans of what was going on, so we sort of left there wondering what had happened. A lot of the fans did.
Yeah, I was on the field getting ready to do the post-game show with Joe on the radio network. And so the first question I asked him was, okay, when the clock gets zero and it's 24-21, how does the game end up being 24-24? And he then explained the clock.
I remember quoting the thing, he said, I remember listening to you in that post game. I always listen to you in the post game when you were doing that stuff. But Joe said, never gone to a tie for his life, but he wanted because he knew that it would be great for that game and that team, and the kids deserve it for where they came from. You know, he gets wrapped by the Pitt fans, but he gets wrapped by the Pitt fans for anything. But, yeah, you mentioned about George Reynolds, 7 punts averaging 47.7 yards. They're considered a key to the win, and he was selected the Bulls' outstanding defensive player.
I mean, the punter. Okay, that tells you all you need to know about the extravaganza. Because Washington had been there the year before. They played in the first Aloha Bowl, so now they're back for a second year. And, I mean, nothing really happened for a long time. Steve Pelur, I think, was their quarterback.
Yeah, that's who was.
And, of course, Doug Strang was Penn State's quarterback. And I want to say late in the fourth quarter, DJ Dozier scored on a run.
Yeah, he had a 2-yard touchdown run after a drive from midfield.
Nick Gansitano.
Gansitano's 49 field goal. That was the margin of the victory then.
It's 13-10.
And
it was the day after Christmas.
December 26, 1983.
They had to spend Christmas Day out there.
And we Penn State fans were watching it, wondering, boy, they're having a great time. And they were, you were out there?
Oh, I wasn't out there. This is how it played out. Okay. How it played out was this. It was so expensive to do this in 1983. That the Washington Network and the Penn State Radio Network got together and put together an agreement where each team would send one announcer. So Bob Rondo, who's doing his last game for Washington.
You talked to him the other day.
Yep. And Bob talked to him the other day, and then we talked for about an hour the other night. Bob did the game, and he did the play-by-play of the first half, and Gil Santos did the color. And in the second half, Gil did the play-by-play, and Bob did the color. I went to Hartford to do basketball, right? And, of course, you know the history of the Hartford Civic Center. The roof fell in once. So I'm in there. I think the game I had was the 27th. So I'm sitting in there, and, of course, you know, they were just out in Hawaii, Penn State won, and the roof starts to leak.
Uh-oh.
I'm like, this can't be happening. As somebody who drove past the Twisted Metal a few times, because obviously my parents lived up there, and I drove past it a few times, I think, oh, no, this can't be happening. So now I got an all-expense-paid trip to Hartford for that one. Arizona State, 51-50, Arizona State's winning. Dwight Gibson bringing the ball up the court. Last shot, chance to win it. Gets his pocket picked at midcourt. Layup for Arizona State. Final 53-50.
How do you remember all this stuff?
Everyone remembers pain.
I keep telling people, you have the encyclopedic mind. I mean, I may have written a encyclopedia, but you have the mind. I don't know how you remember this stuff.
Well, I lived it, so.
I'm serious about this, too. I mean, even something like, were you able to do this as a kid? I mean, do you remember things as a kid and that started you thinking? Or how?
I don't know. I read a lot. I think it's heredity. My grandmother Jones had a photographic memory about everything.
But so minute. I mean, stuff that, I mean, I could understand under talking about the Houston
UCLA game.
Yeah, I could see you, but you rattle off stuff that I keep saying to Carol. How does he do it?
Well, Penn State finished third in the tournament because they beat Columbia in overtime, 84-79.
There he goes. Take him to the bar.
The other day at Channel 3 WPSU, I walked into the holiday party after going out and doing a shoot. And they said, sit down at the table. We have a question. What bowl's always played on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day? And I said, well, the Hawaii Bowl. Right? They put them in the table, I guess, one. So I was like, okay. Look, it's a sad, lonely life.
No, it's not. You're very busy, and you have your wife and your kids, and it keeps you busy and keeps you hopping. And still, I just don't know how you do it. I really, and the older I get, I can't think, the old – CYS,
yeah, but every time we do something that's fun and historical, I bring you on the show because I have a blast listening to the stories. I love it.
Well, when people start asking me questions, I have to go to my books and my encyclopedia. I can't remember this stuff. I can't, at my age, I can't remember names. I'm only a couple years behind Dick Enberg, and you get up in this age and you never know what's going to happen, and you try to keep going, and we just... Old timers mumble too. I was told that when I started the first book, and man, I find myself rumbling, and then the other phone, yeah. But it's true. We talk, and young people don't want to hear that. I sat with at the football banquet. Shane Simmons, is that the kid's name?
Yes, the defensive end.
Very, very. We had three players. The kid from Harrisburg, I think it's a quarterback, third or fourth string quarterback.
Michael Schuster. Who's Dick Hoke's grandson.
That's Hoke's grandson.
Yes.
I didn't know that. I should have. He was joking with the kid across the table, and the other kid was an offensive lineman from Huntington. I can't remember his name. He's from Huntington. But anyhow, it's Simmons, who is very well dressed, very nice. Mm. And I said, I know you're the
you talking Ryan Simpson from Hollidaysburg?
That might have been the. Yeah. But anyhow, the defensive end was the kid.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 34.
Yep, Simmons. Yep.
Yeah. And I thought I'd bring up. So I said, have you ever heard of Steve Smear?
No.
I said, Steve Smear's one of the great quarterbacks. Wasn't that name good name for a lineman? No, they don't know these players and the history that much.
Well, you know what? Fans live the history all the way through. Right? You can talk chapter and verse about a 1959 game between Ernie Davis and Roger Kaufman, Penn State, and Syracuse out at Old Beaver Field. You can do that chapter and verse. You can talk about Smear, Reed, Ham, whatever. Young people kind of have their own, what their sense of history is sometimes last week.
Yeah,
I'm not being critical.
No, I know you aren't. That's true. And the only reason they may know Arrington is because he was on the air.
He's on TV.
And Blackledge, and they know that because they see the guys on TV, but they don't know the other people.
Right, and that's not their fault. they know there's a long lineage of great players that have been here, but they're also trying to carve their own.
Right.
You know, like a Shane Simmons trying to carve his own legacy.
And he might be. I mean, you know.
You get so worried about trying to do your own thing, you can't really think too much about, you know. And then maybe later on you start realizing, hey, wow, that's who I followed. You know, he wears 34, like, you know, Bobby White.
Bobby White, that's what I was about to tell him. He probably doesn't know that. It's Bobby White, you know, and that's what the statue had with those players.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Break a leg out there.
Do the best we can.
And, hey, basketball too, huh? Yeah. Watch for sure.
Absolutely.
Mr. S., nice seeing you too.
Lou Prado, always a pleasure. Dick Girardi, next half hour. Final half hour, Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.